The Problem Gambling Podcast is proudly sponsored by Gamban, the simple and effective way to block access to online gambling on all your devices. If willpower slips, Gamban doesn't. Go to gamban.com to find out more.
Hello and welcome to the Problem Gambling Podcast. I'm Barry Grant, an addiction counsellor with Extern Problem Gambling. And my co-host is Tony O'Reilly, also an addiction counsellor with The Project and the co-author of the book, Tony 10. And today we're delighted to have with us Stacey Goodwin, a.k.a. the Girl Gambler, on all the good social media channels, in particular TikTok, where she's making some amazing videos. And you'll see her stuff on Twitter as well. And she's also the author of the book, The Girl Gambler, a young woman's story of her escape from gambling addiction, which is available on Amazon. You can get it in paperback, you can get it on Kindle. Go out there and get it, because there are very, very, very few books out there by women in recovery from gambling problems. You know, obviously, Tony's written his book, Tony 10. You've got Paul Merson and Peter Shilton writing some books this week about their experiences of recovering from gambling addiction. There are countless books by men about the stories of gambling addiction, and very, very, very few from a female perspective. So Stacey, thank you so much for coming on today. How you mentioned just before we started recording there that you're recovering from COVID. I hope you're feeling all right. And it's mad. We started recording these just after the first lockdowns last year, because things are quieting down a little bit on the counseling side of things. And we said, well, look, let's try and connect with people in a different way. Mm-hmm. Podcast is an interesting way of doing that. So, I mean, what part of the UK are you living in?
Derbyshire, as a lot of people can tell from my accent. Apparently, I have a very strong one that I never knew before, but there we go. Feeling much better from COVID now, thank you. Excited to get my taste back and taste chocolate again, but it will come, I'm sure it will come.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, the taste thing is a weird one. I mean, are things in your local area, are things kind of relatively back to normal, pubs and clubs and restaurants and normal activities?
Yeah, I think for the most part, things are getting back. I spend a lot of time with my family and my nan, bless her. So I've been able to take her to Marks and Spencer's and stuff. So all that's open again. So slowly getting there, but I think just like everyone's still so aware that it's still here and still about and need to be careful.
Yeah. Okay, no more COVID stuff. We're all done to death with COVID. Tell us, okay, how did your experience of gambling start out?
Yeah, so I started work in a bookies when I was 18. I think prior to that, I remember on my 16th birthday realising that I was old enough to buy a scratch card. So I ran over and bought one and I lost, and I had no interest in it after that whatsoever. I don't think I bought another one until I was 18. So yeah, looking to earn a bit of money to go out and get drunk with my friends. That's all it was about. I got a job in a bookmaker's, and I saw it day on day. I'll never forget, there was this guy, and he was the loveliest man, and he'd lost everything through gambling, and he would open the shop with us, he would close the shop with us, he would be there every single day, and I felt really sorry for him, and remember thinking, I would never, never get that bad. How does somebody let it get that bad? And as time went on, you kind of saw people who did win. Obviously, there were people who lost a lot more. And I went over to another shop one day with my friend, and we kind of said mutually, what's the harm in a pound? And that I won. So I put it on, I watched the roulette wheel spin, and I won, and I couldn't believe how easy it was. And that was the hook, was £1. I will never... the irony in the statement that I remember saying, what's the harm in the pound, to what it led to, is unbelievable. It really, really is. And so, yeah, I kind of subliminally, well, not even subliminally really, but I was constantly having it thrown in my face. Prior to being 18, I knew nothing about gambling. And then I was sat in a bookies with horses on every day, with machines on every day, in it all the time. And yeah, that first win kind of led me to think, oh, I could maybe get a little bit more for you and go on another night out this week or whatever it might be. And so I started sneaking in, and it was always the FOB machines for me, the FOBTs. I was never interested in horses or anything like that. It was how instant it was, I think. And that's kind of where it started. Just going more in, more often, changing from coins to notes pretty quickly after I told myself I wouldn't do that. And yeah, it grew from there.
And just going back to that first bet, it's amazing how the similarities there were. Tony's story, you know, started out with a £1 bet in his case as well. And I think his payout, Tony, I think it was a 40-1, something like that.
45-1.
45-1, something like that. So, I mean, your bet, I mean, I'm assuming, I shouldn't assume. I'll ask the question. Were you betting on black or red, or were you betting on an individual number?
Do you know what? She told me, my friend told me to always go with zero. And I think as well, I took some comfort in the fact that that actually happened. Like, it almost made me feel safer in the fact that she knew this was going to happen. And I think that false sense of security obviously led to so much devastation in my life for the next years to come. But yeah, that was what she always told me, and I always stuck to it.
And what's the payout on that?
Yeah, we got £36 for a pound, and that was like, what, 10, 11 years ago? That went out for me, pound a pint, taxi home. That's all I was bothered about. This is kind of why everything I do as well is called the girl gambler. I was still a girl. There was, on my 17th birthday, or the day before I was 18, society told me that it was too harmful for me to do. And I wasn't allowed in a bookies the day before I turned 18. The day I turned 18, I knew no more than I did the day before. I'd had no training. I didn't have to watch anything, but I was allowed to be put into the industry. And suddenly I was allowed to do all. I had no finance. I didn't have my own home. I didn't know anything about bills. But I was all of a sudden allowed to be launched into these dangerous things. And that's something that kind of sits with me a lot. What is the difference in the day? What do you think that I know differently to the day before?
Yeah, I love that. It's a great concept. And certainly as someone who, you know, put a lot of importance on having my first legal pint in a pub when I turned 18. And then I've worked, well, Tony and I worked as bartenders for a long time. And I've worked in New Zealand where it's 21, you know, and they've, you know, to drink in a bar, and they've a lot more restrictions there. I live in Sweden where they've loads of restrictions around alcohol. You're having discussions now. I mean, Stuart Kenny, who's one of the co-founders of Paddy Power Bookmakers, was on the radio here in Ireland yesterday. He's pushing a lot. And Paddy Power have actually kind of done it, although he's not connected with them anymore, to put in a different level of restrictions for people 25 and under, right? Because we know, actually, I mean, the prefrontal cortex, that important decision-making, impulse-controlling part of the front of the brain, is the last part of the brain to develop, and it's into your mid to late 20s when it's actually fully developed. You know, we can actually kind of weigh up the pros and cons, you know, think about the consequences of your actions and make clear, more logical decisions, right? Mm-hmm. So I mean, at 18 we're all pretty impulsive, right? Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great point. You know, when you're 17 and 364 days, you can't do this, this, and this. And then, bing, the clock tick goes over the next day. And like, oh, you can do all these things that you could never do before. And there's no transition into it. And there was a great tutor of mine when I was studying to be a counselor. Jim O'Dwyer is his name. And he talked about this idea that in modern civilized Western societies, we don't have a rite of passage. So you don't have something where the whole tribe says, okay, you do this thing, and once you've done that thing, you're an adult now. There are adult expectations on you, adult responsibilities. You do adult stuff. You're no longer a child. Just put away childish things. We don't have that. Yeah. And in the absence of that, the rites of passage become your first legal pint in the pub, your first legal bet, you know, maybe drug take and other things. They become the rites of passage in the absence of that. So I think that's a really interesting point. What age are you now, Stacey, do you mind me asking?
How do you know? I'm 29 next week.
Wow. Yeah, because I was trying to figure out, I as a former bartender, part of my job was guessing people's ages, and I couldn't figure out what yours was. Obviously, you can ask people for ID as well. Yeah, so I mean, okay, so that's 11 years ago. And that thing, you know, starting out 18, it's funny, because you started out 16, scratch card, and it was a loser, right? Mm-hmm. And then it's like, okay, the interest okay, lost. I just lost my money. Zero interest in buying more scratch cards. You do your first spin on a roulette wheel on an individual number. So, of course, the odds are 35 to 1 in an individual number versus, you know, kind of black or red where it's just evens. And you're getting this pretty big payout, similar to Tony's story. It's not a huge amount of money, but relatively speaking, you know, if you're getting odds of 35 to 1, one of the things that most people do in that situation is go, oh, why didn't I have a tenner on it?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. That's what I said. One of the biggest things that I'll always remember is my switch from coins to notes. That always sticks with me because I told myself when I was doing coins, I would never put a note in. That's where the line was for me. And it was the day that I crossed that line that things went horrifically wrong.
And how long did it take you to get from coins to notes?
A couple of weeks. It went long at all. It hooked me in very quickly after that first time. And like I said, I didn't have any. I was working my contract, actually, with the bookmakers was 5 hours a week. So I ended up doing much more than that, but I was just trying to fund an 18-year-old's lifestyle. That's all that it was about. And so, first of all, to win that amount of money, £30 was big to me, but then also to think about losing £5 at that point was also a big loss to me. But it was within a couple of weeks, keep having these little wins all the time, that I decided that it was time to stake a little bit more now.
Yeah, it's fascinating because we never had the FOBTs in Ireland. Now you can go into a bookie shop and you can play roulette in the bookie shop, but it's on a screen behind the counter, and I think they only spin it every 3 minutes or something. It's a totally different setup. I know the FOBTs were a huge thing in the UK, and there's no law against them in Ireland. There's just a gentleman's agreement between all the different bookmakers not to have them because they know how bloody dangerous they are, right? Meanwhile, the same Irish bookmakers were happy to have them in their shops in the UK, no problem, knowing full well how dangerous they were. Super, super addictive stuff. And of course, you know, you can limit the stakes on the FOBTs in the shops, or you can limit the number of FOBT machines in the shops, but everybody has a 24/7 FOBT in their pocket with their smartphone. Did you ever kind of progress onto online gambling, or was it all in the shops?
Yeah, I went through, so when I was getting through the FOBTs, I'd realized at this point, probably a couple of months down the line, I was in every day. And I knew that I had a problem. And from working in the industry, I also knew how unusual it was for an 18-year-old girl to be sat on her own at a FOBT. Well, it wasn't something that you saw every day. So I started timing myself how long I would spend in each shop and then move to another shop to try and avoid any suspicion with the staff who worked there. And I didn't drive. So I needed to do it that much that I would travel on bus to bus. I would walk all day from shop to shop. And I started putting in more than I could win on the jackpot. So I would be spending over £500 a day trying to hit this £500 a day jackpot. And it sent crazy. And that's when I found online, because I was looking actively for where I could win more money. I was spending a lot in the bookmaker, so I got a lot of payday loans and stuff like that to help me continue on the machines. But the day that I found online was the day that changed everything, absolutely changed everything. I signed up to one account and the limits, there were none. I got asked no questions. They made sure I got a bank account. I got another job at this point, and it was a full-time job, so I did leave the bookies for a job that was full-time. And the ease of it was unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable. Whenever I wanted, I could click on my phone and I'd be gambling. It'd be like I was in that. It kind of felt like a safe space to me, because when you're gambling, I don't see anything else. I don't hear anything else. I'm completely unaware of my external world and environment. And so to be able to get lost in that place within a minute sat at my own home was amazing to me. And I went on to lose every single penny I earned for the next 8 years. Every single loan, and there was a lot of them. There was a whole lot of debt. I lost numerous homes that I was living in, all, and I truly believe had I not been able to do that so easily online, things might not have got as bad as they did, because there is a closing time on a shop. There is a time where you have to walk away. There is a call-off period, and it's not as easy as just transferring money into it. You have to take those physical steps. So it kind of gives you time to think, what am I doing? Online, there's none of that time. It's instant, and I was constantly caught up in it.
Yeah, it's a whole other ball game. I think everybody says it, that I've worked with lots of people who are scared shitless, for want of a better word, of online. They would gamble 365 days a year in a bookie shop, and they know just how dangerous online is. They know it's available to them anytime they want. They would have massive problems in the shops, but at least they know there's a safety valve there, where at some point somebody's kicking them out of the shop and has to close. And online, yeah, it's 24/7, 365. I mean, at any point, were you kind of bouncing around between different online accounts, or did you tend to stay with the same ones?
Oh no, I had. I think every single online account going. I mean, like I said, at this point, if I kind of think maybe 4 or 5 years down the line, I was broke. I was absolutely broken, both mentally, emotionally, and financially. I had nothing whatsoever. I didn't know who I was. All I could do was gamble. That's all I could think about. And I didn't want to do it anymore. And what I would find is I would find a way to get some more money online, and then I would lose, and I would raise it with that online account and say, you've allowed me to gamble this much. I would end up being upset with it and close that account. And within 24 hours, I was opening another one somewhere else, because there is an infinite amount. And that's obviously where for the UK, GamStop comes in, and that's helped me immensely. But I'll speak to people and they'll say, no, I've excluded myself, and I know how dangerous that is, because there are so many. It's so easy to go on and open another account. I honestly think that I've probably had most definitely every single major online account, but I've had probably hundreds.
Yeah, I think that's the way it is for a lot of people, especially with the casino side of things. There are a lot of sports betting online operators out there, but I think one of the things that maybe some people don't realize is that there's a handful of companies that actually make the online games. There's four or five huge ones in the entire world, and then there are just thousands of shop fronts that plug into those games, right? Just thousands and thousands, and many of the kind of household names have hundreds of different versions of the same thing. And you're not necessarily self if you're self excluded from one, you're not necessarily automatically self excluded from all their kind of subsidiary brands. It's really, really difficult. And I suppose in the UK, you have, I know you promote these a lot, you have the great options. So you've GamStop, which is a multi-operator self-exclusion scheme. And also you can do Belt and Braces and Gamban, who will sponsor our podcast. I know you promote them as well. So you have that Belt and Braces. Unfortunately, in the Republic of Ireland anyway, there's no version of GamStop. So people, obviously, we recommend they use something like Gamban. But if you've, let's say, had 100 online gambling accounts, and you think you've self-excluded from all of them, permanently, if that option is available to you, and then you're 3 months, 6 months into recovery, whatever it is, next thing you know, you're getting an email from some online account that you forgot that you ever opened, saying, "Oh, your self-exclusion is over, and here's a few free spins."
And
I'm
do you know,
laughing. It's horrible. Sorry, go on.
that was a huge trigger for me always, was the emails comes and the free bets, always with the free bets. I got VIP status on quite a lot of my accounts, which was disgusting really, because I was spending much more than I could ever afford. They were giving me free £500, and like I can remember there was one day and I'd lost everything. I'd lost absolutely everything, and I was fuming. And they kept telling me, I kept going online and live chat, and they kept saying, your VIP account manager starts at 12 o'clock today. Come back at 12 o'clock, come back at 12 o'clock. And when they came back, they ended up giving me £200, and I was constantly waiting for this person to start. And when I think back now, it's absolutely crazy. And what I think something else that you said, Barry, about the games, I only ever played on one. Like it was very rare I would play on a different game, and so many of the women that I've spoken to have said the same. It's generally what is always a slot with the women that I've found. It's always casino games, slot machines, and there's generally one that hooks them in and grabs them, and that's the one that they will. When I was opening accounts, I was always make sure that this one game was something that they had. So it's scary to know that. This one thing, it is like a drug. I was looking for this game to go and get my hit from and get that high from. So it wasn't even always, I mean, I had a problem with scratch cards as well, because when you've lost everything, I think you just do anything you can to gamble. And so I was quite bad on them, but it was always a last resort if I couldn't get on this game. So the product there has something to answer for in how badly it's making people get addicted to it.
Yeah, I mean, they are addictive by design. Like, there's no two ways about it. I mean, the idea that slots in particular are addictive by design has been around for quite a while. And then, I mean, Matt Gaskill from the NHS Northern Gambling Clinics, we had him on early on the podcast, he's a very knowledgeable and lovely guy. And he talks about this idea as well, which I think myself and Tony would agree with too, that the gambling industry have looked at slots and gone, well, look, that's the most addictive thing we can make. How can we make sports betting more like that? Right? Yeah. So now you watch a game of football, and a game of football is now like a slot machine, because there are 100 different markets in any game of football.
Right? It is. You can't get away from it. You really can't. Even I've seen, like, with the in-play, with the slot stuff, it was the speed of it that's something that enticed me. And now you have in-play betting. You can literally do it halfway through the game. You can cash out. It is exactly, you're exactly right. It is more and more like a slot machine, because you have to be constantly engaged. It's not a case of looking at the end of the game anymore if it's won or lost. There's, like I say, there's in play, go in, cash out, do I cash out, do I not? It's frightening.
Yeah, and I know, Tony, you probably want to come in here in a second, but I mean, there's one other thing that you're talking about there, that people tend to get hooked on a particular game. And I've seen this with men as well, who play, say, online slots, that, you know, you could be watching TV late at night or at this point stage in the game at any time of the day, and an ad for one of these things will come on, and it could be for a website or gambling operator that you've never used, but the game is across most of the gambling operators because they're kind of generic, and then the music will be playing in the background of the ad from that particular game, and the person's brain just lights up, and you can just this intense triggering of all the emotions that go along with playing that game and the associations with it, and a strong urge just to go gambling. And that's that programming. It's that kind of Pavlovian response where they've put all the super addictive stuff that you can get in one place, you know, short of actual physical drugs, right, which your brain, your body's creating those on its own anyway, and just making the stuff as addictive as possible. Tony, what are you thinking, or questions or thoughts so far?
Yeah, I suppose it's really interesting that you mentioned that it was that one game, because in my experience of working with people who would kind of gamble on slots, and that would be their main thing to gamble on, it's the exact same. It's one particular game. And I suppose I was introduced to the whole concept of auto spins by one client there a while ago. I wouldn't have known too much about it at the time. And it really hit me that they used to put on this particular game and then just put on auto spin and just be working around the kitchen. And it, every so often she'd hear the sound, you'd hear the, you know, the noise that you've won, or the near, no, the whatever, the noise, the flashing screens. And it was interesting because I was myself and Barry were last week, we were doing a little bit of research. We were going to go on to LiveScore to see, go onto the app and just kind of have a look at what way that was working in regards to the Champions League matches. And I just came across Twitch on the smart TV, and I just clicked into it just to see what this was all about, because I've heard about it from people talking about it. And of course they do casino type stuff on it. And I just clicked into it and had a look. And I was just really blown away by this person was doing auto spin, talking about it, and all the comments on the right hand side, it was hundreds of people commenting on it. And I just thought, this is like, I suppose it's a world I wouldn't have seen too much of in my addiction. Mine was mainly sports betting, where I would, you know, at the odd time you go in and do some casino style stuff at late at night. But I was really blown away by this. It was kind of, I was kind of nearly, I suppose if you'd had a picture of me sitting there, my jaw would just open, just looking at this whole thing like these. And it was like, I think he had the max amount of, I don't know whether it was real money or wasn't real money. He had the max amount of money on it. It was $1,250 or something. And it was just going down. And then I think the money had gone down about $20,000 or $30,000 in the space of while I was looking at for 2 or 3 minutes. I was shocked. And I suppose more and more because of the rise of technology and because of the ease of access, I can only imagine the amount of people who are getting hooked on, and these amount of children are getting hooked on them. And that's really, really scary because it's so normalized now. It's like, and it's, as Barry said, it's designed, and you mentioned as well, it is addiction by design. Then you add in the ease of access, the speed of play, the sounds, the noise, the lights. It's just, it's like even with the games that wouldn't be gambling, like Candy Crush, they're designed and they keep people playing because of the sounds and the noise. So it does kind of connect into the brain chemicals or neural pathways or whatever. I'm not brain
science, but yeah. I've spoken to a few women, Tony, who have asked me for help with Candy Crush and things like that. They're spending ridiculous amounts of money, like hundreds and hundreds of pounds on these apps, and you're kind of, I see it as a gamble, because I think you're buying with real money, fake money, to go and play to try and win. It's almost the same, but they're so cleverly done that it's not, because you're not directly putting your money on or getting any financial reward, it's not seen that way. But there's a lot of women who have a lot of problems with these apps.
And you mentioned before about, you know, that you had put in more money than the jackpot was, the £500. Like, I suppose my own experience of my own gambling addiction is a lot of times it's not about the winning or losing, it's about just being in action. Like, you'd often hear that, but what was that like? Like, what was that like being in action? And like, it was really vivid way you described it, by hopping on buses and going, you know, different sides of the town and going to different bookies. And I would have done that at the start. I would have kind of been very mindful of going into different bookies to kind of sort of the wooden question. At the end, I was just lorrying money into one bookies. But what was it like? And it is like, there's plenty of different, I know Matt Gaskell talked about this as well. There's plenty of different pathways into addiction. It can be escapism from stress, anxiety, it can be boredom is a big one. We're hearing a lot with a lot of clients at the moment because of COVID. Could be trauma, could be attachment, but it's that escaping is, and even though, you know, I think most gamblers know that when they put that money in, when, you know, deep down somewhere they know that they're going to lose, but yet we still go back and we still go back. So it's never about win or lose, and that's what people who don't quite get it, I think, kind of can say, well, I can't just stop, like, you know, it's just, it's something about it keeps in, and regardless of the negative consequences it has. So, like, yeah, it just really hit me when you described that.
I think I realised that my biggest, I told myself, I knew that there was a level of escapism, and to be honest, I felt more relieved when, I always felt more relieved after payday when I got nothing left, because it was done and I didn't have to go through it anymore. I'd already lost it, that was it. But I convinced myself that all I needed was this big win and everything would be better. I would fix everything if I could get this big win and everything would be sorted. And I got that big win and I lost every single penny. It was enough to change my life. I won 50 grand. It was enough to clear my debts and do everything that I wanted and get myself stable again. And I told myself for so long, because this was a, well, this would have been about 7 years into my addiction, so the very late stage, and it was a very pivotal moment for me, because I believed, I've told myself that I would change everything now, this was it, I've got what I've been chasing. And I remember I was decorating a new flat that I'd had to move in because I couldn't afford to pay the rent on my house, and I remember feeling a sense of absolute loss in myself, because I was thinking, I've done it. What do I do with my life now? I've done it. This is what I've been chasing for 10 years. So what do I do with my life now? And I wasn't happy in the slightest. And I went on straight away and I lost every single penny and more of that 50 grand. And that's kind of when I said to myself, this has got nothing to do with money. This, I've had it, I've not had it, and I'm not happy in either situation. There's something much more going on here. But that was my moment, I think, when I realised it don't matter if I win. It's not going to change.
Yeah, and that's such a great point, and it's such an important point, because that's, I was only talking to somebody about this yesterday, you know, the dream is what you achieved, right? The dream is, okay, I'll keep doubling down, I'll keep chasing my losses, because eventually, especially something like online slots, some of them have massive jackpots. Like I've kind of test driven some of those online casinos, some of the kind of big name ones. Some of them have astronomically high, you know, £250,000 or euro jackpots on them. Obviously, very, very rarely want to be like winning the lottery, but some of them have like daily jackpots that could be 20,000, something like that. And some, you know, they get one every day and they're kind of, it tends to be close to the end of the day. So I mean, and I've had clients who've won 40,000, even more on online slots. I mean, there's that carrot is there, you know, it's the dream. You know, it's there. Somebody's going to win it. And if you're looking at those daily jackpots, well, somebody's just won the daily jackpot while you're playing. It's like, it could have been me. So close. But tomorrow, you know, and the lie. And you keep doubling down. You keep doubling down. You keep chasing the losses. You know, all the time telling yourself that when I have the big win, which you did, I'll clear all my debts. You had enough to clear all your debts and draw a line in the sand and say, you know, I'm done here. I've done it. I've achieved what I set out to do. But of course, the elephant in the room is you have a gambling addiction. Yeah. Right? You have a gambling addiction, and having a gambling addiction means that you are never, ever, ever cashing out that money. You're just going to keep gambling until you hit zero, because that's the very nature of a gambling addiction, right? And that's the elephant in the room for anybody with a gambling addiction who's engaged in that process. When I win big, then I'll cash out, I'll clear all my debts, I'll walk away into the sunset, skipping down the road, happy as Larry. No, you won't, because you have a gambling addiction. You're just going to hand all that money back over, right? Like, and that's the perfect example of that. Tony, you wanted to come in there, sorry.
Yeah, it was just like, again, it reminded me of a film that I saw years ago called Mrs. Hippie Grind, where, you know, the main character has a gambling problem. And he goes through this whole story of trying to get money, and it showed the darker side of the person having the addiction. And not to ruin the film, but I probably will ruin the film if anyone hasn't seen it, but they do get that huge win at the end. It's this kind of, you know, this was it. This was cleared. Everything was okay. There was two of them involved. And then there's a scene at the end where he goes back in to buy a new car. He's got this whole suitcase full of cash. And he's going back in to buy a new car, but he sees his old car that he sold to get money to gamble with. And he buys the old car back. And then the last scene is when he turns on the car. It's this tape he had, or this CD he had, that used to tell him how to gamble. And the last scene is him there, kind of, you can see it in his face. This fella's going back, because it's about being in action. It's about, I think the way I would kind of describe it is that gambling takes away everything from you, as you know, like, you know, all your relationships are impacted. You become, I know I did, it became very isolated. Very introvert, very distanced from people, from even from work. It affected all areas, and your relationship becomes with the gamble or with the gambling, whether that's sports betting, whether that's being online doing it. So it's nearly like a loss. It's nearly like, I'd say, like as you said, you felt empty nearly. So it's nearly like a breakup as such, because you're breaking up with gambling, and this has been your love affair for so long, and you know, it was something that you didn't have to give much to yourself. It was just take, and then suddenly you're there, and it's, you're sitting at home. Yeah, you have all the monies in the account, but then you feel empty and you crave that again. So it's nearly like you crave the chaos, in as much as the chaos. I think there is definitely a loss element in it. And for me, I knew that was working with people. That is one of the biggest things, that when they stop is kind of going, what's now? Because that's been their life for 10 years, 7 years, 8 years, whatever it's been. What now? My life is empty. It's like when you break up with someone, what now? Because all my hopes and dreams were based on this. And when you have that big win, it was like, you know, we have to break up now. I have my win. But then you're sitting there in the flat and you kind of go, oh, maybe I could have a new relationship with someone different, but similar. And I think that's when the problem starts then.
You've literally described everything that I felt, like I said. And I think it was the anticipation as well. I thought that when it gave me what I wanted, I would be incredibly happy. I really believed that it would be, and we'd run off in sunset together, like you said, and everything would be good. But No, it was. Winning was the worst thing that ever happened to me. And I still say that now. That first pound, that, because things were so bad, so bad. And sometimes I think, I don't know, I try to be quite a happy, like, bubbly person and having a laugh, but things were bad. And I didn't want to be here anymore. And I sat losing home after home and believing that there was no way out. And sometimes you have to get that across, because people, especially trying to relate to a lot of women, whether you're gambling thousands or whether it's your last £10, it's all relative, because it still makes you feel that way. And it is the worst place I have ever been. But also, in recovery is probably one of the happiest places, to be honest, because I think prior, I started gambling when I was just an adult. I'd literally just, in the eyes of the law, just turned into an adult. And so I lost all those years where I should have been out going, doing what I wanted and experimenting with friends and going different places and finding who I was. I lost all of that. So now I'm just kind of starting to do that again and see the things that I actually do enjoy. And that was hard in the beginning of recovery, because I didn't know what I enjoyed. One of the things that the women that I speak to are always telling me, they're scared of losing it because they don't know what they're going to fill their time with. We always say we don't have time for anything, but we always found time to gamble. And it is scary, but now I've found that writing, obviously, is something that I really enjoy, and going out and walking and all the things that I told myself when I was gambling. Like the thought of going for a walk on my own, I thought, you would never see me ever doing that. Like, that was a ridiculous thing. Why would anybody do that? And I get so much enjoyment in it. And that's what I think recovery can give you, more than just abstinence, is knowing who you are again.
Yeah, and that's such an important point as well, is that identity, you know, because I mean, when you're turning 18, your identity is still forming. You're still figuring out who you are as a person. That process can go on for a long time. And then your identity becomes your relationship with this addictive thing. In this case, it's gambling. You know, we've all, I'm sure, been in dysfunctional relationships that ended. But even when a dysfunctional relationship ends, you know, there's a normal grieving process there. There's a sense of loss. There's mixed emotions. Even when, you know, look, it was a good thing that I got out of that relationship. It was a bit messed up. But, you know, we still have mixed feelings about it. And sometimes we've broken up with people that we were in a dysfunctional relationship with, only to go back with the same person. I think some of us may have also done that as well. And, you know, in addiction, that's relapse. But, I mean, for you, obviously you're in recovery now, like, and you mentioned that point, and what a disappointment it was, and the sadness when you achieved the goal, right? You achieved the dream. How disappointing. what a letdown that was. And then, of course, you went back on and gambled away all the money. I mean, which would be, I think, for anybody who's listening to this who's kind of on the fence or still kind of telling themselves that story, that when I get to this magical point, then, you know, everything will be sorted. We've all met enough people, and, you know, you guys have lived experience of it as well, to know that nobody does that. Right? If you have a gambling addiction, you're not doing that. It's just not happening ever. Full stop, end of story. The best thing you can do is stop gambling today and seek help. If you're on the fence, if you're thinking that you have a gambling problem listening to this, it's just not a runner. That just doesn't happen, right? But for yourself, I mean, you obviously continued gambling beyond that. What was the point where you said, look, I need to stop. I've got a serious problem here. I need help. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I think it was not too long after the 50 grand, to be honest. I continued gambling because that's all I knew. And I'd started a new relationship with my current partner, and I'd hidden everything. She didn't know about my gambling or what had happened. And some of the lies I told, honestly, I'm so creative in them. I don't know how I managed to keep up with this life. And then she found out, she supported me and we went through, and I still continued gambling and continued lying. And 1 month I had gambled everything within an hour of me being paid. That was like my entire wage just transferred onto an online slot machine and gone. And I had no choice but to tell her. And it meant that she couldn't pay a mortgage. She'd given me this home to live in when I got nowhere else. And it was that hurt that I caused, and kind of seeing her face and knowing that she'd borrowed money from a friend for me as well, and I couldn't pay that back either. And the hurt in her face, and it was kind of then I think that I thought, I've got something worth fighting for. I've got something worth giving up for now. I'd had relationships previously, but there was something about how badly I was hurting this person. And my mum too, she was the person who got the brunt of everything. I was a horrible person during my addiction. I would lie, I would cheat, I would steal, and she always got the brunt of it. But it was realizing that it's not only my homes I'm losing now, I'm about to make somebody else lose their home through what I'm doing. And kind of thinking back and thinking, I know this doesn't have a happy ending. I know it doesn't, because I've already had the high where that should have been my happy ending, and it's carried on. So it's going to take something much more serious. I'd already had two attempts to take my own life because I was so sick of it. And so I remember having the thought to myself, thinking it's me or my addiction now, and I've got things worth fighting for. So it was in that moment I decided to fight, and I looked online. I tried a number of times throughout my addiction to get into recovery. So there were times when I hit rock bottom, and I went to see my doctor, and I will never for the life of me understand why my doctor didn't refer me to the places that I ended up referring myself. I still don't understand that now, to be honest. But I went to a Gamblers Anonymous meeting, and the things they were talking about were brilliant and I think could have helped me. But I was a 20-year-old girl in a group of much older men, and I was the only woman there, and I was so scared that I never went back. And so it was about finding recovery that was right for me. But in that moment, yeah, decided I want to get better. I've had enough. And I found, very luckily, a retreat rehab that was for women only. It was the best thing I ever did.
Yeah, that's something that comes up, and it's not a criticism of Gamblers Anonymous meetings, but it does sometimes come up. You know, Tony may have come across this as well when working with female clients, that, you know, the woman will attend a GA meeting, she could be the only, you know, female in the room, unfortunately. And I suppose there's, across all the addiction services, women tend to seek help in lower numbers. There is a lot of different factors that can be driving that, and I think society in general is more judgmental of women across the board, which does not help, right? So was that, I mean, to go from, let's say, being the only woman in the room in a GA meeting to an all-female, that was a residential treatment service, was it Gordon Moody?
It was,
So they've been going for a long time. They specialize in this. They know what they're doing. So what was that like going from, being the only woman in an all male meeting?
You know what? The experience was so surreal. As I was getting there was like, obviously it was a retreat, it was a rehab. So it needed to be in the middle of nowhere, really, to give you that space. But I was having a panic attack. I rang my mum, going down all these lanes, like I had no idea where I was. And I rang my mum and said, I can't do it. I need to just let me see a town so I know there's somewhere for me to run to, but there wasn't. And so I ended up pulling up at the place, and I walked down the drive, and I was walking away, I was leaving. And the counsellor, who was male, kind of put his arm around me and slyly walked me back to the house. And do you know what? It was so funny. Like, there was this group of women sat in this huge room, and we were all in chairs that kind of faced in a big circle, and nobody said a word. But it was so strange, because we all knew why we were there. we all knew there was only one reason any of us were there, but nobody spoke a word. Like, we were still so ashamed of ourselves and what we were doing that there was this huge pink elephant in the room and nobody did dare address it. And then the moment throughout that day, as we started talking and introducing ourselves, I had the biggest sense of relief that I have ever felt in my life. I remember quite almost like an epiphany moment, I suppose, but I was sat and I was watching these two women talk about the gambling, and they were saying all of the things that I'd never dared say to anybody before, and they understood it. They understood we were talking about being on the toilet late at night, all the crazy things that we'd done to try and get money, and it was spoken about so openly that I felt 20 stone lighter just watching these women talk about it and realise they're not crying while they're talking about it, they're not ashamed, and other people know, other women know what I do and other women do it. And it was, it felt just unbelievable and exactly what I needed. And I believe that moment saved my life. That was the moment that I thought, I'm not on my own and it can get better. But to find other women was massive, absolutely massive.
Yeah, and I think that's such an important part of it, is just to find someone who's on your wavelength and go, okay, I'm not nuts here, right? And that could be around gambling, it could be around anything else. Previously, I would have worked with a lot of people around anxiety and panic attacks. And once you start explaining to people that, look, I've seen four other people today who've told me the exact same story, or you start telling them things and they go, it's like you're reading my mind. No, I'm not reading your mind. You're just a normal human being reacting to, you know, stresses in totally normal ways, and this is why this happens. And you normalize it and you go, this is just normal human stuff. All humans respond in this way, you know, to trauma and so on. And you can normalize it for the person. Groups are even better, because now you're in a room full of people who are all, it's like they're reading your mind. It's like, I did that. I did that. Yeah, I did that. Okay. Other people do this stuff. Okay. It's not just me. Woo. Phew. I'm 20 stone lighter. You know, the therapeutic value of that cannot be overstated. And I suppose if you're in a room full of men, okay, straight away there's the gender divide there, but men tend to gamble sports as well, which is another thing. And that, you know, obviously there's huge overlap between sports betting and, say, things like online slots, but there are big differences too as well. So to be, sorry, Tony, I know you need to come in, but just one quick question for Stacey. Like, what do women have mostly or been gambling on, things like online slots or slots of some sort in that group?
There wasn't a woman there who was sports betting. It was all casino and scratch cards. Yeah,
and that's what we would normally see as well. Tony, you had a question there.
Yeah, I was just going to come in on that as well, because I think that was the turning point for me as well. Like, I remember being driven over to the treatment center in Italy, and, you know, I've written about it in the book, I've talked about it openly since, like, walking to the admissions door and seeing four or five lads in pajamas standing at the door going for a walk. And I was kind of thinking, what the hell is this place? And I found afterwards they're from the drug unit, detox unit. So they would have been in pajamas for 3 weeks, really, just to kind of, for them to kind of realize that they were sick. I think it was a psychological bit of it. But I remember going through the door and going into the nurse's station and sitting in the little sitting room opposite. And it was that moment where the nurse, I suppose, probably was just there just to kind of take details. But she made me feel like I wasn't mad. She made me feel like the empathy and non-judgmentalism, especially the non-judgmentalism, because I had come from the news being in the media. So I kind of immediately felt, this person is not judging me. And like everyone, I suppose, family and friends, everyone rallied around, and everyone was trying to fix and trying to make you feel better, but they didn't quite get it. When someone, a professional, kind of, it was my first time to talk to a professional, and then going into the groups, it was then I kind of felt to get these people get it. Now, I was in a group of 13 other people, and it was all out, they were all in for alcohol, I was the only one in for gambling, but I could still relate to their stories somewhat. And it was that kind of thinking of, yeah, we're not alone here. We're all on this journey together to try to get out the far side of it. And it is okay to show vulnerabilities. It is okay to feel whatever we were feeling. And I think that was definitely, sitting in that sitting room was the turning point for me, because then I kind of knew I'm okay. Before that, was so much up in the air, like the unknown going into treatment. And you know, I'm just recently just reconnected with someone who has come out of the treatment center, and it was really, really, really important for them. And the connection you get in there, the people you meet, and that feeling of not feeling that you're the maddest person in the world, because that's what gambling is. You think you're the maddest person. Like, you kind of, because deep down, you're kind of, you are questioning yourself, why can't you stop? Like, just don't go in. And then your head will be telling you one thing, but your body's still walking into the bookies or still logging online. So you're kind of, there's that inner conflict the whole time. Like, each time I was taking money out of safe, I was kind of saying, you're a thief, you're a robber, why are you doing this? But it was all this thing, I need to fix this, I need to get back to that zero. Very similar to what you described. When I get back to then I'll ride off to the sunset. But the reality, I don't think I would have. Even if I did get everything back into the saves, got everything clear, I believe I would have been sitting there tapping my fingers going, maybe I'll just go back in a little bit. I won't do the same. I won't make the same mistakes. And I can guarantee I would have been back at the same point again. So that was the turning point. And I think it's very important what you were saying. Like, it was that feeling of being accepted. I think when people can connect to that, I think that's when recovery can really start. I think something clicks within you, something switches. I think that's the difference. And I really like the way you said, I finally had something to live for. I finally had something that was worth sacrificing a few weeks of your time to go into treatment, sacrificing, leaving yourself wide open to vulnerability to do that. So I think that's really, really important. Mm. Sometimes people feel like they don't have anything to live for. And I think we know, we've all heard the stories of, you know, gambling with lives, and how, you know, many of their parents have lost people to suicide. So it's lovely to hear that. I suppose the point I'm making is lovely to hear that now you have so much to live for versus those two times when you're in that dark place thinking you had nothing to live for. And that's really an important point to make for anyone who's seeking help. You can come out the far side. You can be a Stacey or a Tony or whoever else is out there that has been in those dark places and go to the far side. It's just about opening up and looking for that, or accepting that support, or being in a position to kind of be open to that support.
Yeah, that's it. I think we both know that the thing that I believed wholly throughout my addiction, especially after losing, was that it couldn't get better, that I would forever be gambling. I didn't believe there was any treatment that would work, or that there was any way out of this. And that's the message. That's the message more than anything else that I try and push across, because I know that's what you feel. I know that if you're listening to this and you're stuck on the slots and you're on them every night, I know that you feel that you have to live. You have to gamble to live. It's like any addiction. You need that. And it's hard to see a life without it, but we are living proof that it really, really can be done. Your life can continue without this thing that your body tells you so desperately that you need. You can live without it. And I think that was really good as well, about what you said about kind of your fight between what your body's doing and what you're actually thinking. I remember when I was logging online, I used to scream at myself in my head and beg myself not to do this. Please, or if I was driving up to a bookies, all that, I would be screaming as loud as I could in my head saying, please don't do this, please don't do this, let's turn around, let's go home. But it never won. Those thoughts never won until I learned, obviously, how to manage them and how to deal with them. And then now, for 2 years, I've been winning any kind of thought that might come in my head that thinks about gambling. So yeah, it can be done.
Stacey, before we let you get back to your day job there, I mean, what advice would you give to anybody who is still on the slots at the moment, or who's kind of conscious that they have a problem and is trying to stop and is kind of, yeah, what advice would you give to someone in that position?
Yeah, I think you mentioned something earlier as well, and you've just said it again. So if somebody thinks they might have a problem, gambling is already taking too much up of your thought time. It shouldn't be taking up time in your thoughts. And so it is the time to address it and do something about it. And I would always say there are so, unfortunately, they're not advertised well enough, but there are so many places that can help. There really is. So a quick search. And I know that it takes courage to send that message or to write that email or to reach out to somebody, but it's like we've kind of said the whole way through this, a gambling addiction won't get better with a win. There's a different way to treat it, and the way to treat it is going through those therapies, through this, whether it's GA, whether it's Gordon Moody, no matter who it is, there is a recovery that will be right for you, and it can get better. It can, but it won't get better until we take that first step. And so as scary as it is, it's something that I am grateful every single day now that I did.
Brilliant, yeah. And that is great advice. And even in the middle of that, you're saying, you know, gambling addiction won't get better with a win. That is absolutely positively guaranteed, right? If big wins do anything, if there's one thing we know about gambling addiction, is that big wins make the addiction far, far worse, because it gives your brain this piece of evidence to say, look, I can do it. I did it once, I can do it again. Exactly. That's just totally toxic, poisonous stuff. You don't need that in your life. And we've had enough people on here, and hopefully we'll have more people on in the future who will attest to that, that it's the big wins that mess you up, that fry your brain, that suck you in. They drive the addiction. They're not the cure for a gambling addiction. That's just a stone cold fact. Tony, any thoughts for Stacey or any questions before we finish up for today?
No, it's very hard to add to what she said. I think totally agree with everything she's after saying. I just wanted to thank her for coming on, because it's great to have a female perspective, because a lot of people who listen will be people who want to get or want to make that first step, as you said, but are afraid to do it. So I think your courage in speaking very openly about it will help people. And it already has. I know from your videos online that it already has really made a huge difference for people reaching out. And hopefully people will continue to do that. And on a personal note, I'm looking forward to reading your book. As I said, it arrived yesterday morning. I suppose I wouldn't have time to get through it. I wouldn't be able to do it justice trying to get through it, to ask you questions from it. But I really look forward to reading it and getting an even more of an insight into your journey and your perspective, because that will help me to be able to work with people when they present as well. So I'm really looking forward to that. So thanks again.
No problem. Thank you for having me, and I hope you enjoy the book. Ignore the spelling mistakes. there will be a few, but it was important for me to get it out there, and especially during the lockdown period as well. So it's just like me. It's a bit rough. It's a bit raw, but it's all true and honest. So
the best type of story.
Brilliant. Well, listen, Stacey Goodwin, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today, and for all the great work you're doing. I know you've mentioned a few times that you're talking to different women online, and people will get in touch with you on your different social media channels, The Girl Gambler on TikTok and on Twitter. And are you, what other social media channels are you on, or are they the main ones?
Facebook's a big one. To be honest, I'm a bit of a technophobe, so I'm trying to work out at the minute Instagram and Twitter. I'm not very good at them. So TikTok or Facebook, The Girl Gambler, that's where a lot of the communication comes through. And it is open to anybody who wants to chat. You are more than welcome to reach out.
Brilliant. And of course, get your hands on a copy of Stacey's book, The Girl Gambler, A Young Woman's Story of Her Escape from Gambling Addiction. It's on Amazon. Get your hands on it. Stacey, thanks so much for talking to us, and hopefully your sense of taste can come back so you can eat chocolate and drink loads of coffee and all that.
Soon it will. Thank you.
Thanks a million. Take care. Bye-bye.